Once upon a time. Those words strike anything in you when I say those words? Once upon a time. For many of us, it probably brings back good memories, right? Maybe you can think back to when you were a kid, and right before you'd go to bed, your mom or your dad would come into your room, and they would tuck you in, and they would sit down beside you, and they would grab one of those books off the shelf. And as they sat down, they would open the pages, and they would begin to tell you a story. And it began with those four simple words, once upon a time. Maybe for you, the memory is not what was happening to you, but what you did for your own kids. Maybe you think back to that time when they would go to bed, and you think back when you would sit down and maybe lay next to them in bed, and you had the book, and you would begin that story time with them. We know that these words were just the beginning that would introduce a tale, a story, that was sure to capture the imagination of the listener. If it was a new story, very often you would find in that young listener that palpable anticipation. What's going to happen next as that you read the story and you turned every page? That restless excitement would fill the room. But it didn't just take a new story to get you excited, right? If you were the listener, you could listen to that story you've heard a million times. And as parents, we know that book. You remember that book that was that your kid's favorite. You wanted to burn that thing because you were so sick of reading that story. But as your son or your daughter, as you read to them, they sat there and they listened impatiently as you read that story because there would be a part in that story that was their favorite. And they couldn't wait for you to get there. Maybe it was where the prince rescues the princess. And I'll be politically correct today. In today's modern version, maybe it was the princess rescuing the prince, right? And together they ride off and they go slay the dragon together. The excitement, the love story that the girls like, or the time where the guy takes the sword and kills something. Boys always love that, right? We like that violence for some reason. But with every night possibly could be a new story. A new time of anticipation, new characters, new adventures, new twists and turns. For some, we grew up on stories like the fairy tales by the Grimm brothers. We're familiar with many of those, like Cinderella and Snow White, Hansel and Gretel, Little Red Riding Hood, or Rumpelstiltskin. Some may have experienced those not so famous stories, but those that had a truth to them, Aesop's fables. Like the ant and the grasshopper. We didn't like those as much because who wants to learn something right before you're going to bed, right? Just tell me something interesting. But many of us grew up with this taking place, with those very familiar words, once upon a time. Personally, I have to tell you, I love a good story. I love to read, but I don't read a lot of fiction. So when I tell you I love a good story, it's primarily in one of two ways, television or movies, okay? Because I am a little bit lazy, so I like to watch that. But I tell you, nothing frustrates me more than when I spend time and I sit down to watch a television show or I sit down and watch a movie and I get to the end and I go, what was that? There was no plot. There was no development. There was nothing. I mean, you feel like you've done nothing but waste your time. And more than likely, I spent a whole $1.50 on it at Redbox. And I've wasted money too. And you feel frustrated. But occasionally, you run across the story, maybe it is the book or the television show or that movie, that as you're watching or reading, you become drawn in to the story. It's like you're there. And in that story, you're drawn in and the author, the writer draws you in a way and you find yourself feeling emotion. I can remember years ago, there was a movie that came out about the racism in the South in the 50s and 60s. And I can remember watching that movie, and when the movie was over, I can remember feeling the anger and honestly the rage that exists that was in me. I felt it. It was like palpable. I could touch it because I was so angry at the injustice that I had just seen on the screen. It just really gave me an emotional response. Occasionally, not often, occasionally, some will even make me sad. I may cry even. I can remember a couple years back, I was invited to preview the movie Courageous. It's a Christian movie, and I have to admit, I'm not always a fan of Christian movies. They're not always done very well, but this one was done well. And I can remember watching this movie, and there was a point in the movie where I actually thought, what is this watery substance flowing from my eyes down my face? Now, I was not boo-hooing, but as I'm just watching this take place on the screen, I've been drawn into the story, and I began to cry. And I actually thought to myself, pull it together, man. Get it together. What is wrong with you? God, come on. But any movie or show that can draw me in that way, that can make me have an emotional response, I think is good. The problem with a lot of modern storytelling is it's very disconnected. You can watch a TV show for season after season, and really the only thing that ties it all together is characters that recur from episode to episode. But there's no overarching theme or narrative that's being developed. Each story is just its own disconnected moment. No thread running through it to tie it all together. This summer I did, at the request of Amy and Matthew Becker, they said, hey, you should check out this show on Fox. It was a sci-fi show, so you guys know me. I'm honestly and unashamedly a nerd. I love sci-fi. And so I watched it, and I loved this show. Do you know why? There were 10 episodes. That was it. There's no plan for a season two. There were 10 episodes at about 40 minutes each. And as I watched them from the very first episode to the very end was the development of this storyline. Everything was building. Everything was getting to this 10th and final episode. There was certainly this narrative bringing it all together. You know, sometimes I think when we pick up the Bible and we begin to read the Bible, we approach it like we do a lot of modern storytelling. We look at a story and we think about the stories that we love to hear, like Jesus feeding 5,000. And man, that's an awesome story. It's a miracle that took place. But we view it in isolation. We view it with just, that's a nice story. Or we hear about Moses receiving the Ten Commandments of God on Mount Sinai. And we think, oh, I love that story. That's really neat how the law came to us. But we fail to see the connection of what that story of Moses has anything to do with Jesus feeding the 5,000. Is there a connection? Does this come together ever at any time? In many stories, we can look and we see the moral of the story. We can find some truth. Pastors are great at telling you truth from a scripture, right? But too often when we come back to the Bible and we flip over the pages and we begin to read another story, we look at it as just that. Another story, another disconnected episode for us to watch. We fail sometimes to realize that in this book, there is a thread, an overarching narrative from the front to the back. You know, this book is a very interesting book. We talked a little bit about it last week. It's this collection of 66 different writings, various types of literature. You read that, it's not all the same. There are some things that you read that are history. You read Luke's gospel and it's very clearly, this is what happened in the life of Christ. But if you take that approach to Psalms, you're going to be confused because it's not written as history, it's written as poetry. You go to Exodus, there's some history, there's some poetry, there's some law. It's kind of all jumbled up in that one. Sometimes we have words of warning written by prophets to the people. Another time we have letters written from one friend to the other that we have the opportunity to kind of peek in on and see what was being said. This book was compiled and written over thousands of years. And through time, these individual writings have been collected and put together. These 66 individual writings and collected into what we now call our Bible. But what I challenge you with is that from the very first page of Genesis to the very final word written in Revelation, there is something that ties this story together, and we can miss it if we're not careful. But what we hope to do over the next several weeks is we would like to spend some time digging into this book right here, to dig in and see if we can discover that it's not this book of disconnected writings, it's not this book of disconnected stories, but rather it's a story that is completely connected with a thread running through it. And what I hope we can see is over the next several weeks, we come to discover the big story of God. And as we open the book through the first pages, go ahead if you have your Bibles, You know, as you flip through, you have to flip past usually a presentation page, which is kind of goofy for a book to have, right? Most books don't have that. You go past the title page and the copyright information, the table of contents, and then we come to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. You may not know this, but the first five books of the Bible are all named after what the first Hebrew word is in that book. And so Genesis, literally, the title is taken from "In the Beginning." That's what it means, "In the Beginning." And that's the name of the book. That's its title. And as we look at Genesis, we take that very first phrase, those first four words, and I believe what we find here is an interesting setup to the rest of the book, an indication of what the big story of God is going to be about. And we're keyed in and clued into that from the very beginning, because what we find in this first four words is the subject. Not just the subject of this sentence, but the subject of this chapter. And not only the subject of this chapter, but it goes beyond that. The subject in that first four words is also the subject of the entire book. But even then, it goes beyond that, because it's the subject of the entire Bible. And it begins this way: "In the beginning, God." For us, this is our once upon a time. In the beginning, God. Now, if you're looking at it, you look and you say, "Well, Brent, why are you stopping there? This goes on a lot, and there's a lot written after that." And yes, there is. Why stop there? I realize that when we come to Genesis, there can be a struggle. One of the things we really try to do in our teaching each week is, when we're preparing, Ryan and I try to challenge each other a little bit. And one of the questions we have is, what are the burning issues related to this topic? And you can't come to Genesis chapter 1 and not acknowledge a potential struggle, a burning issue, if you will. Because what we find is many times a struggle, a debate around this passage, what appears to be an unresolvable conflict between science and the Bible. And we're going to get to that in just a second. But I wanted to stop with these first four words, because I really believe that in here, in this first part, we find really what we need to be focusing on. Before we dive into any other creation issues, we need to stop here first and foremost and understand that when Genesis begins that way, "In the beginning, God," the concern here is not how old the earth is, or how long it took God to create it, but the primary concern of the creation story is God. The primary concern of the creation story is God. What leads me to that conclusion? When you read the Bible, we often you can very easily tell that this is not something that was written yesterday. It wasn't written a generation ago. It wasn't even written 100 years ago or 250 years ago at the time of the founding of America. These words were written much further back. In fact, Genesis was written by and under the direction of Moses, most likely. The original audience would have been ancient Israel. Around 1400 BC is when this would have been written. And when you take that into consideration, what we discover is that the primary concern at that day, at that time, was not a scientific concern. They weren't worried about the science. They weren't worried about how creation happened. Because if you study the original audience, you would know that this was God's people, the nation of Israel. And as they're moving into the promised land, you find them confronted, surrounded with various other cultures, and every culture had their own creation story. You may or may not have known that. If you study this, you'll see all these cultures brought about all these various ways of how we came to exist. And most of them were kind of weird. And most of them included some off-the-wall things about multiple gods killing things and all this. Just for example, there was one story that taught that the heaven and earth were made out of the slaughter of a sea monster, and human beings were made from the blood of a slain god. This was what they were confronting when they were going into the promised land. Polytheism was rampant. Worship of multiple gods. And the writer of Genesis begins his words with, "In the beginning, God." What do you think the author was thinking when he penned those words? Was he worried about all the other stuff that I think the baggage sometimes that we bring to Genesis? I don't think so. I think the point is that he's trying to make is this: there is one true living God. Because the author, above everything else, is concerned that we know the who of the story. And that who is God. Because the entire point of the book of Genesis is God's self-revelation of himself to his creation. That's what we see. But it doesn't end there. That's just the beginning. That's just scratching the surface, because it's not just introducing us to God. Because if we do continue to read, what we'll find is there are several truths revealed to us about God. So what does creation reveal to us about God? Well, we'll keep reading. Back to verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. Back to that very first phrase, in the beginning, God, gives us our first picture of who this is we're talking about. Because this is a God that is an eternal God. In the beginning, God tells us that when the world began, God was already there. He was. He has always been. God is. He is eternal. And because he is eternal, everything that we see, everything that exists, everything around us, you and me, the vegetation, the animals, all that exists finds its origin in God. Because before there was, he is. But it doesn't just tell us that God is eternal. It says, in the beginning, God created. God created, and we see that God is a God who creates. Pastor Tim Keller, one of my favorite guys to read and follow, he says this. He says, this is the religion, and this is the only book which opens, and in the first scene, God has dirt under his fingernails. God is making things. God is forming things. No other creation story had this. No other creation story had God creating this way. What's interesting is when we get to that word, in the beginning God created, that's a very unique word. In fact, in the Hebrew, that word is only used of God as a divine action. And not only is it just a divine action, but the understanding behind that word is that when God created, he created from nothing. If you were to tell me, Brent, to make a cake, I've got to go somewhere. I've got to pick up some supplies. I need some flour and eggs and, you know, oil and whatever else I need. Probably a box. That's easier, right? But I have to go find the supplies to make what I make. I can never sit here and stare at this table long enough and go, cake, and a cake appear. And yet in Genesis, when it tells us in the beginning God created, he created from nothing. He spoke and it came into existence. If you want to impress your friends, this is called ex nihilo or ex nihilo. Out of nothing, God created. Not only do we see God as an eternal creator, what this tells us is that since he created from nothing, that he is the sovereign creator. He is over all that exists. You see, because he created it, he is over it. He is not limited by it because he created it. In fact, Old Testament scholar John Walton said this. He said that in creation we see, quote, a demonstration of God's independent, autonomous position as the sole and ultimate source of power and knowledge in the cosmos, end quote. What he's telling us is that as God created from nothing, this eternal creator, sovereign God, that there is none like him. The other religions, the other cultures around them were exalting multiple gods and saying that there was in the creation, that there was these gods that made other gods. And the creation story that Moses pins here says, not so fast. There is one true living God, and there is no competition for him at all. He is the eternal creator, sovereign God. He alone rules and reigns and holds it all together. We continue to look in these two short verses of Genesis chapter 1, and we see something else. It said, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty, and there was darkness over the surface of the deep. When you study the underlying theme of what's taking place at this moment, you'll understand that this is creating chaos, or there existed chaos at this point. There was no shape, there was no form, there was no order. And yet by the voice of God, he brings about order. And we see that God is a God of order. He brings that order to the chaos. Formless and empty, water and darkness is chaos. And what we find is that when God speaks, he brings order to the chaos. You want to take just a side note here, a little application to your life. God speaking into your life often brings order to the chaos of ourselves. That one's free. I don't charge extra for that. In bringing order, we see something else about God. We see that God had a purpose in this creation. This isn't just some random chance occurrence. It's not an accident. Creation happened because God wanted it to happen. And when he began to create, there was a plan in mind. This isn't random chance and molecules bouncing off each other and things happening that... No, God had a plan. And what's going to happen over the next several weeks is we're going to unfold that plan for you to see that God had even when he began right here in creation. If you continue reading through Genesis, you have this beautiful picture of things coming together. And again, don't get hung up on is it literal or is it figurative? Those are the things I think that distract and cause us to miss the main point that the author is trying to reveal. There is a God. The main point of this is God. But there's one more thing we see about God, and we have to read through. We see that God said, let there be light, and you have all these things in the evening, in the morning, the first day, and you kind of have this very poetic thing happening here through Genesis 1. And you jump down to verse 26, and God creates something different. At the end of the creation story here, we read this. It says, then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created mankind in his own image. And in the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. At the end of this creation story, when it all comes together, we find a God who is not just eternal and a creator and sovereign. We find a God who is very personal. A God who creates humanity. And in creating humanity, he shows us that he has a desire to know us. Now stop and think about that for just a moment. Stop and think about all that exists. And what I'm telling you is that regardless of your creation theology, I'm telling you the who behind it. God created it. And he's the one that the universes exist, are hanging out there because of his word. He is the transcendent, amazing God that holds that all together, and yet he is the same God that shaped and formed you and has a desire to know you and for you to know him, to live in relationship together. When we read Genesis 1, there may be a lot of things that we want this passage to say, but above all, I want you to understand what it's talking about is not the what, but the who of the story. and that who is God. But it doesn't end there. Because even in what we've read so far today, I think it doesn't just reveal things about God. It also reveals a lot about us. You see, this passage that I just read, Genesis 1, 26 and 27, is very interesting because there's a phrase in this passage that he uses when referring to humanity. It says that you and I and all mankind, male and female, are created in the image of God. Now, do you realize that above all creation and in all creation, nothing else is given that designation? Not the trees, they're not made in the image of God. Not the animals, they're not made in the image of God. Not the mountains, they're not made in the image of God. Only mankind is given that designation. Now understand, it doesn't mean that the rest of creation is bad, because when God created, he said it was good. But when he says he created us, he says, I am placing my mark on you. You are in my image. And what that tells me is that there is a special place for humanity in God's creation. We are not on the same level as a rock. We are not on the same level as a tree. We are not on the same level as the animals. We are God's principal creation. We are the apex. We are the pinnacle. Because after he created us, he was done. We are different from all creation. Special. We're in his image. Now, what does that mean, in his image? Does it mean this is what God looks like? I hope not. A middle-aged, slightly graying guy with a little hint of a southern accent. I do think God speaks southern, but that's a whole different point. That's not what God is talking about. When God says we are made in his image, it means that we originally were created to reflect God to the world. We were created to reflect the character of God. And what God looks like, we were to be a mirror image of that. When we read that God is holy, we too were created to be holy. When we see God as a God of love, we too were to be people that reflected that love of God. But it didn't just end there. That's not the whole purpose. We were to reflect the character of God, but we're also to be the vessel through which God accomplishes his work in the world. When you read the creation story, you find that God looks at mankind and he gives us a job. He tells us, there's something I want you to do. He says, I want you to rule over creation. Not in a tear it down, tear it up kind of way, because he also says, I want you to take care of creation. He doesn't tell that to anything else but mankind. He says, you are the vessel. You are given the responsibility to take care of my good creation. That's what being made in his image means. To reflect who he is and be the vessel that he uses to carry out his purposes in the world. But it also tells us something else. You see, because being made in his image also gives us this idea that, as we said, God is a personal God, it also says that we were made for relationship with him. This isn't a one-sided thing. This isn't one God pursuing us with a creation that just continually rejects him. No, we were created to live in relationship with him, to know our Creator, to seek to deepen that relationship with him, because we need this relationship. And what's interesting about this relationship that we have with God is it's really not, sometimes we picture us here and God here and him putting his thumb on us and whipping us and striking us down, just waiting for us to do something wrong. We view ourselves in this image that says God, and we should fear God, yes, but not this way. Because when it says we're made in the image of God, when we're created to live in relationship with God, what that means is not as slaves, but as partners, partners with God. That's how we were created. That is what we know, because he entrusted the rest of his creation to us. And it's through that personal relationship with him where we find our purpose. Because we are created with purpose. Just as I said, this isn't an accident. You and I aren't an accident. Your parents may have told you where you were an accident, but you are not an accident. We were created with a purpose. We are more than just cosmic accidents between birth and death. There is a reason for your life. And when we see the creation story, we understand that that purpose comes from our Creator. We are created with purpose. And there's one other thing I think we see from this creation story. And I'll tell you, this one's not very popular, because we're pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and take care of number one and deal with things ourselves. But what this creation story tells me is that we are created to be dependent upon God. We are dependent upon Him. All these characteristics I've mentioned reveal to us and show that we need God. We need God. We are His principal creation, made in His image, created for relationship with a purpose. And we look at those things and we think, I don't really want this God thing though. And so the trap we fall into as humanity is we begin to find substitutes for these things. I don't want a relationship with God, so I'm going to go out and find relationships with others, and I'm going to pour myself into that, and it may even be your family, all to the exclusion of a relationship with God, because really, I'm my own man. I don't want to need God. We look and we say, I don't want to find my purpose in my life from God, so I'm going to create my own purpose, which honestly to me makes no sense. A self-defined purpose is just silly. It's really no purpose at all. We look for substitutes, and so many times we find that these things fall flat. Maybe not right away, but inevitably, they will leave us empty. There is no substitute because we serve a sovereign Creator, eternal God, who created us for relationship with Him and with purpose. And it's through Him that we find fulfillment and we find that purpose for life. As we consider these two points, what creation reveals about God and what creation reveals about us, I hope that you're beginning to catch a glimpse of the big story of God and how this truly begins. Because it's really not as much about the what or the when or the how as it is about the who and the why. The who being God and the why being for relationship with us. Now, as I said earlier, I don't think this message would be complete without kind of addressing maybe possibly an elephant in the room, the potential questions raised by Genesis. And I said it earlier, is there this unresolvable conflict between the Bible and science when it comes to creation? I've studied this. I've talked to people about it. People that know Hebrew, people that have studied Genesis. I've read both sides of the equation. And here's the best pastoral answer I can give you. I don't know. I don't know. Does Genesis 1 teach exactly how God created everything and how long it took Him? I don't know. You know how I came to that conclusion? Nobody agrees. There are good, godly, biblical, theological scholars that will tell us that God created everything in 6 24-hour periods, and the earth is young. And there are godly theologians who know Hebrew and study better than me that say, this is poetry, this is a song, and the earth is old. And the best answer I can give you is, I just don't know. But the best answer continues to say, I don't know, but I don't know that that's the point. As we look at Genesis, if we look at that as simply a textbook on how things were made, I think we miss the big picture. I think we miss what the writer of the story was trying to communicate to us. And in one commentary, there was a statement, and I wrote it down because I thought it was amazing. And the author said this. He said, what if Genesis isn't as much the story of creation, but rather the beginning of the story of the Creator. Let me read that again. What if Genesis isn't as much the story of creation, but rather the beginning of the story of the Creator? Now, I know when you're a Christian and when you've been studying things like this a long time, we love to debate these things. And if you sit here today and you're going, Brent, you're wrong. You can be on either side of this. I'm offending everybody today. I'm just an equal opportunity offender, and that's fine. And if you want to say, Brent, you're wrong, and you want to go grab a cup of coffee and tell me why I'm wrong, let's go. I'm not going to argue with you over it. I've studied. I know what I believe. But at the end of it, to me, it's secondary. It's secondary. Young earth, old earth, creation, what, all that mess? Because if we miss the fact that this entire story is pointing us to God, we've missed it all. And if our theology creates a barrier between other people because they can't get around that to see God, we have a problem. Our theology should never be a barrier to prevent people from seeing exactly what this entire book is about. And that is a God who created and gives life and gives meaning and gives purpose. That, to me, is what Genesis 1 is all about. And I close today with just this final question I want you to think about. You read Genesis, and Genesis 1, Genesis 2, the story of creation. It's a great, great story. I encourage you to read it this week. But think for yourself, why is it recorded this way? You'll immediately pick up on when you see that God created this, and he said it was good, and God created this, and it was good, and God created this, and it was good. God created this, and it was very good. And you look at that and you say, why is it recorded this way? Why does God give us a peek into a perfect creation? I tell you, I think it's because it's to show us that the way things are now are not how they've always been. The way we see things now is not how it's always been. A world with war has not always been a world of war. This world with a refugee crisis happening in Eastern Europe is not always the world that this has been. This world filled with poverty, this world filled with evils such as sex trafficking of women and kids, this is not how God created it. As it exists today, let me tell you, this is not good. But there was a time when God created, and he looked at his creation and he said, this is good. There was a time it was better and good. And hopefully you'll stay with us over the next several weeks as we unfold this story. Because what's interesting about this story is that this story begins in a garden with perfection. You will find when we get to the end, there's another garden of perfection. And we're living in the middle between the two gardens. But I get ahead of myself. As you've heard this today, what has God said to you? I hope the things you've heard are this. There is a God. There is one God, one true God. And he exists to be in relationship with you. That's not his only purpose, but he wants to be in relationship with you. He desires for you to know him, for you to live your life in a way that embraces the purpose and the fulfillment that he desires for us. Are you living your life with purpose? Are you missing it? If so, look back to the creation story and see the God who created you for a reason, for a purpose, and he endows you with that purpose. Are you resisting that relationship with God? Is he drawing you out and into himself and you just keep going, God, I'm not ready? Understand that from the creation of everything, God's desire has been relationship. Stop resisting. One thing I didn't mention yet, but I think it's important, is we've talked a lot about God. And even in Genesis 1-2, you see where the Spirit of God. What's interesting is as you look at the creation story, there is one more thing you find about God. And that's our God exists as Trinity. God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. I've already mentioned two of them to you. We jump to the New Testament. And when you read John chapter 1, you see the same intro as we've got in Genesis 1. In the beginning. But it doesn't stop there. John writes, in the beginning was the Word. And that Word was Jesus, just so you know. In the beginning was Jesus. And Jesus was with God and Jesus was God. Jesus Christ had His hands on creation from the very beginning. And it is through Him that we have relationship with God. Do you desire that relationship? Let me encourage you, stop resisting, repent, and realize that everything that you needed to be done for you to have this relationship restored has been done. And you can experience the love and freedom and the purpose that God gives. So it begins with God. The big story of God, it's His story. It's about Him. And that's where our story begins today. He creates everything. He creates us. And the Bible is not some random collection of stories. And we're going to find that out. But it's not just examples of us on how we are to live. Let me just tell you, if that were the case, if this was a book of us just telling us how we are to live, then the book would be about us. But it's not. It's about Him. And not so much about what we need to do to get to Him, but about what He's already done. Next week, we're going to pick up this story right here where we leave off. We're going to find that humanity lives in perfection for a little bit, lives in a state where they're communing with God, walking and talking with Him in the garden, but something goes horribly wrong. Everything was good, but it didn't stay that way. Don't miss next week as we continue the big story of God. Would you stand with me as we pray?